So this is part 48 of a 49, we'll see, maybe 50 part series on Tara. We're getting to the end, and I want to, over the remaining 2 days that remain during Sphira, talk about two interesting developments in the Tara world over the last, I would say, 150 years, 175 years. Certainly the one I'll talk about today, you could pitch into the mid-19th century. A lot of people hear the phrase brisker derech and brisker lumdos, and they know that, I don't know, 70% of the yeshiva world that studies Gemara analytically practices one form of another of the brisker derech. And a lot of people who have never been into a Beis Medrash don't know or are clueless of what that means. And I think that even people that are in the Beis Medrash that are learning the brisker derech have a hard time articulating what they're doing. It's always hard to be conscious, you know, the tools of how to make the next step, but how does it differ from other approaches? What are the advantages? What's the methodology? So, with the caveat that it's hard to put a methodology on Gemara learning, with that caveat, let me try to describe as best as I can the Brisker Derech. I'll first try to describe the assumptions that the Brisker Derech makes. What are the assumptions that this whole approach takes? Number two, I'll try to define the process. Number three, I'll talk about the difference between this approach and other approaches. And if we have some time, I'll throw in a couple other ideas. It's a very ambitious goal, but hopefully, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will help me explain to people what they're doing, or people who are not exposed to it, why this attracts so much love and passion. The assumptions of the Brisker Derech are threefold. Number one, there is logical consistency in Shas. So when you see a dead end, or a contradiction, or a dichotomy, or a discrepancy, that has to be solved. And the assumption is that two statements that may appear to be saying discrepant, arriving at discrepant conclusions, they're not meant to be contradictory. There's a discrepancy. That discrepancy is important, but there can't be a contradiction where it's just a machlokas of sugyos, you've got all these rough edges and loose ends and shas. That's, of course, the assumption Tosfos popularized by making us see two sugyos side by side together. Vim tomer, how could this Gemara say such and such when another Gemara says something a little bit different? Of course, Tosfos very often chooses an ukimta to solve it, that this Gemara is talking about a very specific case, but we'll hold off on that right now. Okay, the second assumption is what I would call fundamentalism. Then, when a position is taken in Shas and issues are discussed in Shas, a Tana or an Amora reaches a position not because of some arbitrary, capricious, or even technical reason, but there's a fundamental logic how they viewed a particular halacha, and that logic determined their shita. If I hold the following logic about halacha, then I'll come to the following conclusion in its application. So the first is consistency. All of Shas is united, unified by one common logic. The second is fundamentalism. Positions taken by Tanaim and Amoraim are fundamental unless otherwise stated. Unless the Gemara says, oh, the reason he reaches this conclusion, it's because in his place they acted that way. But 90-80% of Shas is based on fundamentalist logic. Number three, instinctualism. That even though Tanaim and Amoraim didn't articulate the ideas that Brisker Lumdus will ascribe to them, it's because they knew it so well that it was instinctive. I call them finger snappers. They came into the shiur room, and they started talking about these conceptualizations that never happened. They're not real cases. Shas isn't the Shulchan Aruch primarily. They're just conceptualizing the will of Hashem. And everyone in the classroom, everyone in the Beis Medrash knew what the logic was, based on the positions they took and they asserted. So there's an instinctualism. These are the three premises of Brisker Lumdus. Shas's logic is consistent. Positions taken in Shas are fundamentalist rather than technical. And even though they weren't articulated, they were thought of instinctively, even though they didn't have to articulate them. Therefore, part two, how to define Brisker Lumdus. I'm going to break it down into three steps. Obviously, these are gross, gross overgeneralizations. I call the three steps atomization, definition, and globalization. Atomization means you take a particular chunk, nugget, atom, element, item of knowledge, a shita of the Rashba about Kinyan, shita of the Rashba about Melacha Shabbos, and of course, a shita where he says something a little different from the Gemara. He extends the Gemara's halacha, he limits the Gemara's halacha, he provides an exclusion to the Gemara's halacha. Everything is an application. You're always moving the bar, moving the cursor. So you first have to find the halacha you're trying to understand. Halacha in the Rashba, Chiddush in Rashi, a Chiddush in the Rambam. You atomize, because Shas is every sugya gets copious amount of information, and every Rishon can have 14 different ideas. You take the, you hone in, you try to pull out. We're now discussing this idea, this halacha, not the other 13 issues the Rashba raises. Then you define it. Definition is, or you analyze, or you explain its inner logic. This is the nuclear core of Risku Lumbus. This halacha of the Rashba, or for that matter, this extension of Rava, of the original halacha of the Mishnah, it indicates, because it's not based on some capricious arbitrary logic, it indicates something deeper about that category. That's why Brisker is called categorical learning. So there's a lach of Einad Machna Dava Shalom B'Leolim. You can't be Machna to Machlok is actually. What does that show me about the category we call Kenyan? This halacha, in this case, a limitation, what it ain't Shlichos Edvar Avera. What normally there are exceptions. I call it the kryptonite rule. You can prove a principle, but it's exception. What is this limitation on Shlichos? Teach me about Shlichos. What is this halacha of Birchas Atarah? Just taught the Birchas Atarah to my shir. Teach me about the nature of Birchas Atarah. So because everything is fundamentalist, so every halacha, every detail, every position is a hieroglyph, is a portal to help us better understand the fundamental category that that halacha belongs to. What does it teach us about Kenyan? Brisker always asks himself, what does it teach us about Kenyan? What does it teach us about Ksiva? What does it teach us about Suffolk? What does it teach us about Edim? So every halacha is an application of a category, and by probing what this application or extension of that category is, and why we reach that application extension limitation, we can better understand the categories. We're trying to build categories. What is a Kenyan? What is Ksiva? What is Melech HaShabbos? What is a Beis Din? What is a Sanhedrin? What is a Bracha? What is the definition of Kriyat Shema? Everything is a category. So you atomize a particular application extension limitation, the Shita. You define what does it show me about the category. Then once you made a decision about, or you made an assertion about the category, then you globalize. Oh, now that I've defined Kenyan this way, the category of Kenyan, let me look throughout other places in Shas, even those which the Gemara directly doesn't reference or Tosafot doesn't reference. They knew about them, but it was instinctual. I can then learn other halachas about Kenyan because I've defined the category of Kenyan. If Kenyan is such and such because I've defined it that way based on the atomized halacha that I've explained, then I would expect Kenyan to act this way in this context and that way in that context. Or a Gemara that a lot of people will get to very shortly, the Gemara about Ksiva. How do you write a get? Can you write Ksav Agave Ksav and Dafyomi? Can you write ink on top of other ink? So if it is a Ksiva, is it not a Ksiva? Once I determine whether it is or isn't a Ksiva, then what would it be? How would it play out in Shabbos? If I write ink on top of other ink on Shabbos, would it be Chayiv? Would it be Pater? This is, of course, something which Tosfos raises. The Rishonim in Shabbos Kuf Ches raise. And then once I define Ksiva for Shabbos, then I could try to probe other halachas and other questions regarding Ksiva on Shabbos. So that is a three-step process of Brisker Lumbus. You atomize something you're analyzing. You analyze and define the category based on the application. And then you globalize. Once I've defined a category, that's why Brisker Lumbus operates in categories, and it's the categories that bind Shas into topics rather than just a long array of details. People that aren't able to learn Brisker Derech, it's just detail after detail after detail. Whereas Brisker Derech says every detail is really an indicator of a category. And then once you define the categories, then you can see Shas. What is the definition of Kenyan? What's the definition of Issa Shabbos? What's the definition of Shlichos? What's the definition of Shomer? What's the definition of whatever Zachalim Shalom B'fanav? And of course, there's no one definition because Hashem's knowledge is multiple truths. That's the best I can do in 6 or 7 minutes about the Brisker Derech. Now, what's the difference between that and Pilpul? Well, there are different ways to solve these stiras. Brisker Derech says, this is Reb Chaim's classic language, it's Tzvei Dinim. There are two different halachas in Kenyan. One is how you make the Kenyan. One is the Maisa Kenyan. One is the Dasa Kenyan. Two different halachas in Issa Shabbos. So there could be clusters of categories that all devolve upon one particular halacha. And one Gemara is talking about one category that pertains to that halacha. Another one is talking about another category. So, for example, this Gemara is describing this category of shlichus, what operates in this fashion, whereas that Gemara is describing an entirely different plane of shlichus. So the two halachas, or the halacha I just taught yesterday, there are two different roles and functions of Birchas Hatara. One function of a Birchas Hatara is a Birchas HaMitzvah, let's say. One function is the Birchas HaShevach, let's say. Let's just say the Rav said this a little bit differently. Whereas Pilpul tries to give very, very localized solutions that don't breed sharp categories. The way to solve the contradiction is if you say this, and he says this, and he holds like this shita, and that shita holds like that shita, and you say this morning is talking about such and such, then it's not really a contradiction because you've escaped your way out of the tight space. But you haven't built categories. It's very much a local solution. And if you're wrong, it's like a house of cards. If one step in your pill pool solution is wrong, the whole house falls apart. If this and that and that and that and that, then there's the solution. All the ifs have to be correct. Whereas Brisk Lumdus is more like Lego. You say, well, this halacha shows me how I define kinyan. And based on how I define kinyan, I can then apply my definition of kinyan to other details about kinyan. And even if in one particular application I may be wrong, even though I define kinyan in a certain way, the application I'm assuming is incorrect. Okay, so I break off that piece, but the rest of the Lego structure remains intact. That's why Brisker Lumdus helps us build the infrastructure of Shas rather than just solving local issues. Two final comments of Brisker Lumdus. Number one, original Briskers in particular were very attracted to Mesechtos that Rishonim hadn't written about. They were highly organized and had systems and built-in categories and built-in layers and planes because it is a perfect reflection of the way they thought. That's why Mesechta Tzvachim in Taros. Taros is very contoured. Aviyavos HaTumma, Avatumma, Rishon HaTumma, Tumma Chulin, Tumma Sakodesh, and of course Kachim, 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 Bedek Avayis, Kachim Mizbech. There's so many different tiers to Kachim. And of course, there's always the added advantage that Rishonim hadn't written about Kachim, so it gives Briskers a little more of a free hand to say things that aren't as constrained by Rishonim. I don't mean Briskers like you and me. I mean Briskers like Revelvel. Revelvel would very often the center of Chaim say something, and you ask yourself, not in an irreverent way, but this sounds very, very novel. It may seem to go against what I would have thought, and you would expect that had Tosas written about it or the Ramban, maybe you would have said something a little differently, but so it gives a little bit of open terrain. So the Briskers were attracted to the Rambam, because the Rambam is also very, very structured and organized. The words he uses, the organization of his halachos, the insertions in particular chapters. So these are two fields of Torah which were perfectly suited for categorical thinking. The only final thing I'll speak about is, and this I think is a bit of a shift in Brisker learning, and Brisker never asks why, that's for philosophers. Brisker asks what? Brisker is a scientist. It's basically induction and deduction. You take a shita and you induce the category from the shita. Based on the shita sarashba about kriyashma, I can induce that he felt that kriyashma was defined as follows. It didn't Talmud Torah, it didn't kriyasatara, it didn't kabbal smachos shemayim, whatever. Now that I have the category defined, now I can deduce other principles of kriyashma. The Rashi would probably hold you need when you say kriyashma to say this way rather than that way because of how I define kriyashma based on his original halacha. So I'm always asking what, like a scientist, never why. But especially I think as Brisk evolves, a lot of people feel, and I think this is implicit in Rabbi Soloveitchik's ideas, that when you atomize and define things so clearly, it's much easier and much more precise to then make the leap to say, well, now why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu script it this way? Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu mandated that way? Until you concretize and quantify and map the coordinates of a particular halacha, it's very, very speculative just to sit there across a cup of coffee and say, what does Hashem think about marriage? And how does Hashem see marriage? But once I go through Maseches Kedushin and I iron out thousands of categories of how you make a Maseches Kedushin, how you break a Maseches Kedushin, a get, surrogate Kedushin, Yevamos, and of course each of these have thousands and thousands of tributaries, then I've defined and mapped, in this case, different models for Kedushin and for Gittin. And now I could start to, based on these quantified definitions, start to think, well, why does Hashem? And of course this is a throwback to the old world. The old world didn't really differentiate between what we would call metaphysics or philosophy and science. Science was a combination of the what and the why. The why of the world could be gauged in part by probing the what. And of course, in the modern world, science and philosophy are completely torn apart. Of course, in the world of Torah Lavda, we don't expect there to be dichotomy, but you just have to keep your discipline. When you're analyzing Gemara, never, never, never ask why. Analyze it, cool, cold logic. What is the halacha based on? Once you define it, say, now, once I've defined it, I've finished my cold analytics of the sugya, then I want to ask myself, why the Kodesh Baruch Hu? But if I introduce the why, then I'm going to short-circuit the logic that I'm trying to use to try to map the halachic system. This is the best I can do to help explain the Brisker Derech, which, as I said before, in one manner or another is practiced in probably more than 70% of the yeshivas that study Gemara in depth.